Hey everyone, Kevin Rose here. Welcome to Proof, a podcast dedicated to the NFT ecosystem. Here we interview artists and builders shaping the NFT space with a focus on high quality projects. Now, the episode you're listening to now was actually first released on my other podcast, Modern Finance, but as we decided to kick off this show, we wanted to re-release my previous NFT episodes here so that this feed represents all of the NFT content that I've created. Now, going forward, the Modern Finance podcast will have a focus on finance, and this Proof podcast will have all of the NFT content. If you're a fan of all things blockchain, you'll want to subscribe to both shows. So with that, enjoy the show. So as you know, this show covers all things blockchain. So from time to time, I want to bring on NFT artists that I respect for what I'm calling an NFT artist spotlight. So today, it was my pleasure to sit down with a generative artist, Tyler Hobbs. In the space of dynamically generated art, Tyler is just an absolute legend, having sold out his most recent ArtBlocks NFT drop pretty much like the second it hit the site. In this episode, we cover Tyler's history as an early generative artist, how he mixes his hand drawings with algorithms, the tools he uses, some of the rare attributes his collectors are excited about, and some of the other NFT artists that he respects. And we talk about a few of his works of art in this episode, so I highly recommend that you follow along. Just head on over to modern.finance and you'll find all of the links there. All right, let's get into it. This is Tyler Hobbs.
Kevin Rose and his guests are not registered investment advisors. All opinions are Kevin's and his guests alone. Nothing discussed today should be relied upon for investment decisions, nor is it investment advice. This show is solely for information and entertainment purposes only. Please work directly with an investment professional.
Tyler, thank you so much for joining me. Appreciate it.
Hey, Kevin. Yeah, absolutely. I'm so excited to talk about artwork. My favorite thing to talk about. This should be a lot of fun.
Yeah. Dude, over the last couple of weeks, you have blown up. Not that you haven't already had a huge following, but like that ArtBlocks drop was just nuts.
It's blowing my mind. Yeah, I feel like I was doing pretty well, and this is just on a whole nother level. It's taking me some time to get my mind around it. Yeah, it's been a wild experience.
Yeah, let's start at the beginning. I'd love to hear just how and you got involved in art. Was this a kind of childhood passion, or in software development and all that good stuff? So if you could just walk us through that, it'd be great.
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, I've been making my art my whole life. I grew up drawing, started doing a lot of painting when I was younger. I was lucky enough to, you know, have some after school instructors, that taught me to paint. And so I was always really passionate about artwork growing up. And I wanted to go to school for artwork, but my dad talked me out of it. He, for very pragmatic reasons, he thought going to art school would be kind of a bad idea. And I don't necessarily disagree with that, but fortunately I had been doing programming classes in high school and really enjoyed that. And so he made the call to study computer science instead. And after I graduated, I went into the tech startup world. I joined a company that worked on a really cool open source distributed database called Apache Cassandra. And that startup did really well. I really enjoyed the engineering challenges of that.
But, oh man, we used Cassandra at Dig back in the day. I don't know if you ever heard that.
Yeah, actually, y'all were one of the more infamous users. I think that was in the bad old days. There were a lot of problems.
Oh my gosh, there were so many issues. We embraced that tech way too early.
Yeah, you and Reddit and Twitter, lots of notable users that ironed out all the fun edge cases. So yeah, I was right in the mix of all that. I was still a junior, but I was working on that whole database scene around Cassandra. And so yeah, I really enjoyed the engineering challenges, but I kept working on artwork in the background, and I had made the decision thinking about what I wanted to do with my life. And there were some choices between being an engineer, being an entrepreneur, being a musician, and being an artist. And ultimately, I decided to be an artist. And so I kept studying artwork a lot more seriously and making it a daily practice. And one piece of advice that you'll hear given to artists is that you should try to work with what's around you, what you know, basically convert your life into the artwork. And since programming was such a big part of my life, I knew that I had to make it part of the artwork as well. And so I started thinking about how to involve programming and artwork. And I had a few, you know, really bad starts that didn't quite work out, but eventually I had the idea of what would it be like if I wrote a program that generated a painting? That was sort of my initial impetus. And So I gave that a shot, and it was instantly much more interesting to me than any of the actual paintings I had been making.
And what year was this, by the way?
Yeah, this was it was 2014, so about 7 years ago.
And I'm looking at your website here and looking at some of the pieces that you have. So do you have this displayed on your site as well?
I do, yeah. So on my site, tylerxhobbs.com, there's a work section, and I have it grouped by year, so you can go back. I didn't post all of the really early stuff, but there's a few from, I think, 2015, maybe one or two from 2014 that you can spot on there. And obviously, I think my recent work is much better, but I could tell right away that I was onto something pretty interesting, and there was no going back for me after that. And in fact, I wasn't at the time aware that this was even a scene around generative art. I didn't know the term generative artwork. I didn't know that there were decent tools out there for it. I was using Matplotlib, which is like a Python scientific charting library. So not even great for the purpose. But yeah, I discovered generative art and some of the other artists that were out there already working. And yeah, I've been doing it for 7 years since then.
How big was the community back then? Because I'm just trying to think of what was going on at that time. You were pre-NFT, all that stuff. So how did you get connected with the community? How many people were doing the generative stuff back then?
Yeah, very few. There was a couple of artists that had been doing it for a couple decades at that point that were fairly well established, but there was not a large base. It was just a select handful of artists here and there. I think the biggest scene that I found early on was the r/generative subreddit, which when I joined, I think it had 500 people maybe in 2014. I haven't looked at the numbers anytime recently, but I think it's somewhere closer to 20,000 now. Yeah, so it's blown up considerably, and there's a lot more artists, a lot more variety of work that's really high quality now. So it's definitely going through a special moment.
Yeah. Is everything on your site, like when I look at the self-portrait, like that's not generative, is it? That was something that you did on your own? Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm particularly interested in the intersection of hand-drawn work and generative work. So there's a few different bodies of work that I have. And one thing that I like to investigate is how to mix those two. I feel quite comfortable working in a purely generative way, but since I do have a really strong drawing and painting background, and I still love doing those things, I'm looking for ways to mix the two, because that's also underexplored, in my opinion. So yeah, I'm curious about that crossover of kind of digital world meets analog world and how we mix the two. And
can you give me some examples of if you're going to go about mixing the two? Like is it something where you classically create something in front of you and then scan it in and then use generative on top of that? Or how does that typically work for you?
Yeah, it's a great question. I've tried a lot of different methods. Right now, the approach that I like the best is I'll start out with a drawing on paper because that feels really comfortable. It's nicer to draw on paper, I think, than drawing digitally. But the next step is to photograph the work. And then I wrote a little custom software interface where I can essentially do like a digital tracing of on top of that photograph. And that's a good way to convert it into vector data. And from there, I can take that vector data and work with it in a generative algorithm. It's just a set of curves that I can play around with. And from there, I might even go back into the physical world. So I will then generate a set of instructions that can be executed by a plotter, which is a simple two-axis robot. You stick a pen or a pencil in it, and you give it instructions on something to draw. So I might generate a design for the plotter to execute on paper, and then I can go back and work on that by drawing or painting on top of that if I choose to. So there can be several layers of integrating these two components. Other times, I'll make a custom software interface where when I draw, it's a real-time generative effect that gets applied to whatever I draw. And so there, it's a much more live interaction between the two modes of operating.
Crazy. So what do you mean by that in the sense of real time? Like, is it something where you're hooked up to like one of those Wacom tablets or something? Or
exactly. Yeah. I have a really nice, huge Wacom tablet on my desk, and I write this software in something called Processing, which is a really common piece of software for generative artists to use. And yeah, I can basically just use a pen and draw directly onto the tablet. And as I draw those curves get fed into the algorithm as input, and something else gets drawn depending on what the algorithm is.
Crazy.
Yeah. So it's a real time kind of magical drawing environment that I've built for myself.
That's it. That's awesome. So what? How do you come up with the algorithms that actually do the manipulation of what you're drawing in real time? Is it something where you start off with an idea, you're like, okay, I want it to have this feel, or it must just be, is it a ton of just tweaking numbers, re-rendering, tweaking numbers, re-rendering? What's that process look like?
Yeah, the process for me is very exploratory. I don't usually have a super clear idea up front of exactly what I want to do. It's more of a rough starting point. Like maybe I took inspiration from something I saw outside. I take a lot of inspiration from nature. Maybe it's an idea of how I can tweak an existing algorithm that I've used before, or maybe combine two older algorithms. And then it's very exploratory. So I just get something down, a very simple piece of code to begin with. I run it. I see what it looks like. I think about how I can improve it. I make some code changes. I run it again. I cycle back and forth, often hundreds of times while I'm developing these algorithms. I've put out some videos on Twitter and Instagram where I save every image as I'm developing the program. Every time it's run, it generates an image and I'll save that. And I like to create these videos where it's a few of these images, a few frames per second. And so you can watch the entire development of the program from scratch until the finished product in the span of 30 seconds. And so I think that gives you a good feel for exactly how much I'm just kind of wandering through the space, looking for something that really inspires me and catches my eye. And once I find that sort of special element to the work, then I switch into a mode of polishing and refining it instead. And there it's just a more of a standard artistic practice of just, you make every element as good as you possibly can.
Yeah.
So that's my normal process.
That's great. Can we walk through, and I can put links in the show notes for anyone that's curious, but could we walk through a couple of your works and you could just talk about the process?
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, let's go back to, on your site, 2015, because I'm just curious to see some of the very early stuff. This three lines, it's just, is beautiful. How did you create that?
The three levels?
Yeah. Three levels, that's right.
Yeah, this is a very simple piece. This is just a black and white piece, and I'm looking at it now. It's just some really simple curves, but the way I constructed it is, it's basically, it's just drawing very large circles and just moving them by a little bit of an offset each time in different directions. And so this is something that would not, if you look at the code for this, if you're a programmer, you're not going to be impressed. This is not a technical program. This is a very simple aesthetic program. And so this is more in the vein of maybe a more minimalist style of artwork that I really enjoy, where it's much more about the structure and the rhythm of it. And to me, that whether or not the program is complex almost has no value to me. I don't value that aspect of the work necessarily. I'm really just interested in what the visual output is and what it says visually. And so for this one, I think I was just playing around with what happens if, yeah, you draw really big circles and then you move them in certain offsets. And this is one of those where, you know, I generated something like 1,000 outputs from the program and just hunted through and found the really special ones. And this particular image was by far one of my favorites. It's just sometimes in generative work, the stars just align and it does something that you never would have come up with on your own. But once you see it, you recognize the beauty in it right away.
Yeah, that's interesting that you went out and generated 1,000 of them. So you're just like with your file browser open, just sorting through and saying, oh, that one's awesome. Is that how it works?
Yeah. In fact, I came up with a system where I do multiple rounds of curation. So it's too hard to pick the very best one straight out of 1,000. So I'll go through and I'll do a first pass of saying, these are acceptable. I'll narrow it down to 50. And then I'll narrow it down to 10, the 10 best from there. And then maybe I'll pick my few favorites. And prior to Art Blocks, I would pick somewhere between 10 and 20 images that I thought were the very best, and I would sell those. So that's, I know we'll get to Art Blocks in a little bit, but that's a really big game changer between my old process, like these 2015 works, and the more recent work.
Yeah, that's actually, we should cover that. Back in 2015, before there was Art Blocks or any of these really marketplaces or NFTs or any of that, what was your process like for actually making money from this stuff? Was it just something where, I remember DeviantArt was big for a while. Was there just other marketplaces where you were selling them?
I've just been selling through my own website the whole time. I've got an entrepreneurial background. You might not even know this, but actually I was one of the co-founders of a true ventures company that sadly the pandemic shut down. But
I did not know that. That's crazy.
Yeah, I know. But in any case, I have an entrepreneurial background. And I definitely think about this from kind of a businessman perspective to some extent. And I wanted to control my own destiny a little bit more. So I focused on selling through my own website. And my normal process would be, I would create a new program. I would generate all the images, pick my favorites, and then sell unique prints one at a time. So if I had picked 10 images out, I would do 10 different prints. Each one was original and unique. And I thought that was fantastic because that was felt like the perfect middle ground to me between only selling original works, which if you sell one unique work, you have to price it very high in order to make any sort of meaningful revenue from that. And then what artists have historically done are multi-edition prints. So they'll make 200 prints of the exact same image and everybody gets the same thing. So what I loved about this generative approach was there's a cool middle ground where you can still produce a lot of the output, but each one is unique and special. Selling through my website, I was never going to be able to hit super high volume. I think the most I've ever sold from one program in terms of selling prints directly is about 32 works. And those were very successful ones, in my opinion. So it was much more intensive and sort of one-off work selling through my website.
Yeah, that's awesome. Let's jump to 2016.
Okay.
You have a hearing there that is just like this beautiful kind of layered. Was that 100% an algorithm or?
Yes. Yeah.
Wow.
And this is, again, it's another black and white work. It's a flowy work and it has a lot of textural elements. It's built from a lot of small lines. So yeah, there's a few interesting things going on this one. First of all, this is early on when I started to work with this algorithm that I've been playing with for years. Called flow fields. It's a way that I create some organic looking curvature that's hard to come up with otherwise. And so that's one interesting element. And that's something that I've continued to use in my recent work. Another thing that's nice about this one, I think, is it demonstrates an area of imagery that isn't accessible unless you're working algorithmically. There's so much fine detail and so much precision in all these little lines mm-hmm. that realistically, it could never be created by hand. And so it's a new aesthetic space that the computer opens up for us. And I think anytime we can get into that area, it's more exciting. And yeah, often I find myself kind of creating work that, yeah, if you were like a madman, you could maybe create it by hand, but you know that somehow the computer is involved in there. So finding that balance point between the human hand-drawn aesthetic and the computery algorithmic aesthetic. That's the sweet spot I like to play in.
Yeah, that it's very apparent. Like some of your, even in the more recent art blocks drop, like some of them, you'll look at them and you're actually not even sure. I'd say most of them, you could believe they were created by hand. And then some of them even have the texture on them to make it appear so. If I just saw a large printed kind of painting of that up on the wall, I might think that there was no computers involved at all.
Yeah. And then that's a common response that I've gotten. And my intention is not to make a fake painting. Like I'm not interested in necessarily trying to fool anybody. I think it's just that my artistic inspiration, all the artists that I've loved over the years have all been painters. That's really what I like looking at the most. And so I think it's just a natural way that my work has evolved, that I've carried that aesthetic over into the digital realm somehow.
Yeah, very cool. 2020, some of your stuff is just unbelievable in 2020. Not that your others aren't, but I mean, this is just like, wow, every single one on this page, I'm just absolutely in love with. Can you walk us through a couple of your favorites?
Yeah, absolutely. 2020 was a big year. Let's see. So one thing that started to pick up a lot in 2020 is I got more opportunities for commissions around mural work. And so sometimes I do printed murals and sometimes I'll do painted murals. So I think on the top of my 2020 page, there's a series of four printed murals. And these are ones that are about 30 feet wide. And what I think is so cool is with a generative approach, you can work at any scale. The scale doesn't matter as much in terms of the code, right? Like you're still writing the same kind of code. You have to think about how it will appear 30 feet wide instead of just being on your small monitor screen. But the approach is still the same. And yeah, I think, so I'm really interested in taking these programs and applying them at a really large scale, whether that's through printing them or through painting them. And yeah, if anybody wants an awesome painted mural, I'm looking for more of those. So just putting that out there. But yeah, what's so cool is you can pack in all these details that you just, you would never necessarily do this kind of thing by hand, or it would be outrageous to do it by hand.
So some of this stuff looks like, it looks like there's texture in the sense that you would almost believe it's a raster kind of created image and these aren't vectors. Are these all vectors, or did you use some initial kind of textures to seed some of this stuff?
Yeah, so it's, I kind of work in a hybrid mode of raster and vector. Technically, processing is all raster graphics.
Right, to get into its final state.
But the way I write the code is a pseudo vector approach. So every time I'm specifying a position or a length or any sort of dimension, I'm specifying that in terms of the width of the image or the height of the image. So essentially, it's scalable,
right.
Infinitely scalable. So a pseudo vector approach, but there's a raster background. And so I have the option of using either one.
Gotcha.
And the textures, most of the time I'm still doing vectorized textures. I think some of these you might be looking at. Loxodography is about maybe a third of the way down that page. And that has this rough, almost like a painted texture to it where it goes in and out and fades in and out. And that's just based on doing millions and millions of tiny little lines. Again, something that's accessible algorithmically, but physically just you would never work that way. Yeah, I like applying that texture because, again, that's something that we see everywhere in the natural world. Anything you look at in the natural world has texture just all over it. But in the digital world, by default, everything comes out really clean and hard and precise and cold. And I'm interested in working a little bit harder to escape that default output from the computer. It's worth celebrating and exploring too, but I like to see where that intersection of the natural flawed reality is when it meets these algorithmic approaches.
Yeah. Awesome. So what does your tool set look like? What would you say if someone's listening to this and they're like, okay, I'm interested in getting into generative art. Is it something where 75% of the stuff that you use is all handwritten, or are you relying upon certain open source projects to pull this off?
Yeah. So I'm using Processing, which is an open source piece of software, and it's a low-level graphics library. So the API or the instructions you're giving it are along the lines of take this a sequence of points and draw a shape with that and fill it with this color. That's the level of instructions that you're giving it. So essentially everything above that, everything design-wise, is my code. And I like to keep it that way. I like to not rely on other software too much, mostly because mastery over your tools is a really important part of being an artist, I think. And rather than using somebody else's fancy equations that I don't really understand, I would rather have a really rough go at it myself. And even if it's flawed, it's something that I own and understand. And yeah, I would recommend that for anybody that wants to get started is just go out there and start experimenting. It's really about having a sense of fun and playing with it. And there are great tools in all of the popular programming languages. Processing is a Java-esque one. There's a JavaScript version. I personally use Clojure because it's a great programming language. But yeah, Rust, C++, doesn't matter. There's great options for every single programming language out there. I highly recommend just jumping in and getting started.
Yeah, awesome. When was the first time someone came to you? And were you like a old, like a CryptoPunks collector? Or when was the first time you heard about NFTs?
Yeah, I was not privy to the scene at all. So I think about beginning of this year, beginning of 2021, all of a sudden my inbox just started blowing up with people telling me to get into NFT. And at first it was like a couple people on the first day, and then five the next day, and then 10. And then started being just an outrageous number of people. And I brushed it off at first. I wasn't sold on it off the bat. But yeah, really the tipping point for me was when I found out about ArtBlocks, because I think NFTs in general are cool, but ArtBlocks is something really special for generative artists in particular. And I saw some of the existing work that was getting put out there that was just absolutely incredible. And I knew right away that it was going to be an amazing fit for generative art and for my artwork. And so I hopped on the bandwagon like immediately when I found out about ArtBlocks.
And had you done any, so prior to your more recent release on ArtBlocks, had you done any NFTs, or have you since went off kind of on any of the other platforms?
Yeah, I have not done any other major releases. I put out just a couple of small pieces on HEN, and those were honestly so that I could get into a show that had that as a requirement for entering the show. So I made a couple there, but I didn't really hype them up because I wanted the ArtBlocks release to be my real entrance into the space, because I knew that it was going to be special.
That's awesome. Let's walk through this ArtBlocks release. Can you tell us, I'm assuming you spoke with Eric at some point. We've had him on the show before. You found out about ArtBlocks. How did the project come together, and what did you create?
Yeah, so I found out about ArtBlocks by looking at the release by Kettle Golid, who put out the Archetypes series on ArtBlocks, which I still think is amazing. I think it's incredibly beautiful work. And if you don't own one, you should, because it's going to be a museum someday. So I saw his work and yeah, I was hooked on ArtBlocks, immediately sent in an email to Eric proposing a project. And I just took some sketches that I had from this program in development. And I think he wrote back the next day with just a super appreciative email. He was incredibly excited about it. I think he had been following my work already. And so he was hyped on it. And so I got into the queue for ArtBlocks. I had to wait a few months because they had been flooded by submissions, and they're playing it fair. Everybody has to wait their turn. So the upside was I got to keep building this program and tinkering with it for several months as I waited for my turn to release it. Yeah, the program's called Fidenza. I think it's by far my most successful program artistically. It's not a departure from what I've done before. It's a continuation, but I think I just nailed everything on this one. All the pieces came together. And so Fidenza generated 999 mints for ArtBlocks. And what I think is really amazing about this program is the variety that comes out of it. So there's a really difficult tension in generative artwork between producing variety and producing quality. By default, the more variety that you introduce into the program, the lower the average quality is. You might get one amazing one and then 10 duds in a row. And so if you're selling these to people, you don't want to sell 10 duds and one amazing one. You want to sell like 10 good ones and one amazing one, maybe. And so finding ways to ensure that baseline level of quality with the output while still giving the algorithm the freedom that it needs in order to produce these really exciting, unexpected results. That is what I think Fidenza really nailed for me. I'm very pleased with the balance that happened with that program.
Yeah, absolutely. So just to give you a sense, I always do this with some of the more major releases on ArtBlocks, but I went through every single one just because I find that sometimes some of the rarity actually can't be captured by the attributes. And so I'm always looking for something that just stands out or jumps out as being something that the algorithm created that I may not be able to filter by, mm-hmm. Which is, you know, obviously when we're using some of the filters, you can go and say, okay, show me the most rare attributes. But
right.
Yeah, there's just so many cool ones, man. This is, and they're all so different. It's like you nailed it. Like you have just so many different looks and vibes. And did you write specific code to make sure that you had colors that were compatible with each other?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, the color has been a really important part of generative artwork for me. And honestly, I think it's one of the hardest aspects of the art form. I see a lot of generative artists struggle with color because it's so hard to tackle programmatically. And so my approach for this program was to, for the most part, this is made out of constructed probabilistic palettes. So essentially what I've done is I've put together a set of somewhere between, let's say, 5 and 15 colors that I've hand selected that work well together. And then I'll assign probabilities to those colors. So maybe there's a 10% chance of it using red, 20% chance of using white, 5% blue. And so I've picked out the specific colors and roughly the ratio of how they might be used, but I'm not controlling the placement of them. So that's where the magic of the algorithm and the randomness that's inherent in it comes into play.
Gotcha. Very cool. When I was looking through all these, of course, I try to find, as a collector, I think there's a few different approaches. One is, for me in collecting NFTs, number one thing is I have to be drawn to it personally. That's absolutely, outside of rarity and traits and all that stuff. It's like, it has to be something that I want to own for the long term, because I'm not one of those people that just buys rare attributes and then tries to flip them a few days later. Like, I plan on holding these and, you know, passing them down to my kids and all that good stuff. And I know that digital frames will be there in the next few years, and it'll just be a beautiful thing to have when people come over to your home and things like that. But on top of that, I'm like, okay, maybe there is something on the more rare side, on the attribute side, that will jump out and be something that is something that people that are your collectors, they talk about it, they get excited about. Every project, I would say, on ArtBlocks that has a following has people that geek out and say, well, I have one of these, which is a subset of something internally. Like, for a great example of this is, I don't know if Dimitri, the creator of Ringers, but for him, it's the bullseyes, right? Like, the bullseyes, I think there was around 75 or so of them. And anytime there's a bullseye that are inside of one of the Ringers, the price is 10x what it is.
Right.
Yeah, when I look at yours, I would say the first thing, and correct me if I'm wrong, because it's the first time we've talked about this, but I would say that the spirals are starting to be like the more collectible ones. There's 35 of those. Is that accurate, or is there other attributes that you're seeing that are community favorites?
Yeah, I'd say definitely the spirals are one of them. The other one that has stood out a lot is what are called the micro uniform ones. And so that's an attribute that relates to the scale of the shapes. So the micro uniform only use tiny little shapes, but there's like thousands and thousands of them in the image. And so it creates a totally different feel from the other works that have large shapes.
I just clicked on the micro uniform. The floor on those is $94,000 for a micro uniform.
Yeah, I couldn't afford to buy a micro uniform. So those ones I think are cool because it's a rare trade, but it's not the most rare. And people just really dig them for the aesthetics, which that's personally what I like. I understand the mindset of going into it, looking at the rarities and all that. But I think if you buy a piece of artwork that you find beautiful and moving, like, you can't go wrong with that. I think. Whereas you can easily go wrong buying something that's rare, but that you don't find beautiful, in my mind.
Yeah.
These are pieces of artwork, right? CryptoPunks, to me, feels much more sort of collectible. It makes sense looking at that from a collectible viewpoint. And of course, it's a work of art in the sense of demonstrating what you can do with the blockchain and all that. But yeah, with my work, I feel like, yeah, it's artwork. It's not, sure, you can collect it, but you should view it as artwork and appreciate it as artwork. And that's the way that makes the most sense to decide what you want to collect as well, is what you find beautiful.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, there's some really beautiful ones here at the micro uniform. I see why people are attracted to these.
Yeah, Dimitri minted one as well. So
way. That's great.
Yes.
It must be nice to have a fellow artist. I really love Dimitri. What a fantastic human.
Me too. He was one of my favorite artists even before ArtBlocks. He's been making fantastic work. And so I know that he'll continue making great work. He's been great for the space. He's been a wonderful advocate. So I couldn't be more pleased with him having minted one of those as well.
Yeah, that's fantastic. So when someone were to purchase one of these, and if they want to go, and then obviously they get the NFT, where do you store the images? Are you IPFS? I know, I believe that ArtBlocks is just doing IPFS, but what are your thoughts on like long-term image storage? Like if a collector came to you and said, hey, I own number 328 of your project, I want to do a massive thing on my wall, would you provide them? Do you work with collectors? How does that work in your head?
Yeah. So there's a few things to answer there. So number one, just in terms of storing the image or making sure they're reproducible, I still have the original script on my home computer, and I can take the hash that was the input on the ArtBlocks side, and I can recreate the image on my local machine. So that's one level of sort of reproducibility and longevity. But this is on my to-do list, but I need to go and just download or generate a super high resolution version of all these images up front just to get it out of the way so that I know that they're somewhere. In terms of getting them up onto walls, I am offering prints right now of Fidenza pieces, and you have to own the NFT in order to buy the print. I'm only offering one print per edition. So once it's been printed once, you can't print it again. I do have a little registry of those on my website of which ones have been printed. I've been getting tons of orders for those. So I think it's about 80 or so that are in the pipeline of being ordered, which is almost 10% of the stock at this point. And yeah, it's been wild seeing how many people want the high quality artist signed prints up on their wall. But that's a great sign to me. If it's beautiful enough for you to want to put up on your wall and show to everybody, like I couldn't be more happy with that. So that's been one of the best things to see.
Yeah, that's fantastic. That's great. And also just shows you the lack of like high quality digital frames that are out there.
I feel like Yeah, I'm still disappointed with that space. It's just hard to get the resolution that you need on a digital display. Maybe 8K will get there, but I think people don't realize how high resolution prints are. So those are 300 DPI, which means 300 pixels per inch. And even 4K is nothing compared to that. The quality that you get out of an artistic print is, yeah, it's going to be a few years before digital displays catch up to that.
Yeah, and then just getting the aspect ratios correct, and how do you get the power without some weird dangly cord going down? There's like a lot of things to figure out.
Yeah, that's the aspect ratio is a good part of it too, because these ones are a 5:6 aspect ratio, and probably nobody's going to put out a screen that's exactly that. So you're going to have some kind of a weird margin on it, and yeah, there's issues.
Yeah. Cool. Curious, as an artist in the space, what other artists do you look at and you say, gosh, I'm just blown away. Like, these folks can do fantastic algorithms.
Yeah. There's multiple. So I mentioned Kettle Golid earlier with his Archetypes piece. That's one of my favorites for sure. Dimitri, of course, is fantastic. I'm going to pronounce these names the American way. Alexis André has been great. Matt, this is the Americanized version here. Desloriers is how I'm going to say it. Maybe it's supposed to be pronounced the French way, but Matt DESL online. The next art block drop this Friday is Casey Reese, who is an absolute legend in the generative art space. He created Processing along with Ben Fry. And for the past like two decades, he's been, I think, by far the most important generative artist in the space. He's done so much work in terms of just developing the reputation for it and establishing a serious body of work in this medium. He's fantastic. Aaron Penny is another great artist in art blocks that has been really supportive. There's other artists that haven't been on art blocks yet. Maybe we'll see them. Manolo is an amazing generative artist. Yeah, there's more than I can think of off the top of my head, but I think there's at least a dozen, maybe 10 to 20 really good artists out there, but there's also a really big drop off because this is a very difficult medium and it's hard to find that intersection of having the programming chops that you need and the visual taste. Like, that combination is the really rare intersection.
Yeah. But I think that's what makes it so special. It's not everyone can do it.
Right. Absolutely.
Great. So what does the future look like for you? What would you say? Are you going to be doing more murals for the short term? Do you think you'll do some kind of one-off NFT drops? Yeah, what are you working on next?
I haven't had a ton of time to think about it, and ArtBlocks has been a real game changer. So, you know, I'm not totally certain. I'd love to continue working with ArtBlocks and doing more of these kind of large format generative drops because, it seems to work very well for me. But I do love doing the murals. I love the opportunity to get art out into the public space where anybody can enjoy it. It's just part of their normal day. You don't to see it, you know, so I think that's a beautiful thing. I also love doing just one-off smaller pieces that, like I mentioned, that integrate the drawing and the painting. I'm working with the plotter. For me, that's a very meditative, meaningful, and enjoyable process, just sitting down and actually working with my hands after having spent so many hours on the computer. I think the main thing that's going to change after this is just I don't have to worry about short-term sales anymore. I'm doing really well. And so that gives me more time to think, develop the projects before I release them. So I think I'll be putting work out there less often, but I think it'll be more special each time that I do.
That's great. Sounds like you had a great process and launch. Obviously, your project sold out right away on ArtBlocks. Do you think there's another ArtBlocks in the future for you?
Oh, 100%. Yeah, 100%. I'm not going to rush it. It's like a band putting out an album, right? Like, you wouldn't want them to put out two albums in 3 months. You want them to sit down and make sure that it's good work. So for me, it's going to be, I'm just going to continue my normal artistic process and create new work. And once I feel that it's the right fit for a potential art block drop, then I'll look at how to do that.
Fantastic. Tyler, this has been such an honor and pleasure to have this conversation with you. A big fan of all your work. You go back and you look at just how beautiful and, yeah, I guess you said it earlier, it's generative, but it feels so soft and so real. It's clear you put in the extra time and effort to not just create some kind of sterile algorithm that pumps out artwork, but it feels so personal. I don't know. I'm a huge fan. So thanks for creating this.
Thank you, Kevin. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And thank you so much for having me on. I've loved talking about it. That's been a pleasure.
Awesome. Well, let's have you back on when you're ready to launch something new. It'd be fun to go into a new project.
All right. I'll agree to that.
All right. Thanks, Tyler.
Thank you.
That's it for this episode. If you enjoyed it, do me a favor, send it to a friend that you think might also enjoy it, or head on over to the iTunes podcast directory and give us a 5-star review. That is it for now. Take care.